On a strikingly sunny afternoon in the PAF boatyard, Jordan Hansen of the fishing vessel Mr. Fox is just getting his feet wet. He's tying cork after cork after cork onto gill nets.
So the corks float and the leads sink, and so that's how it works. But that's just what I've been told. I mean, I don't really know. I've never seen it work myself.
Hansen may be new to commercial fishing, but he's no stranger to the water. After rowing competitively at the University of Puget Sound, he's rowed boats down both the Columbia and the Mississippi rivers. Oh, one more thing. He raced a 29-foot rowboat across the North Atlantic Ocean in 2006. That's about 3,200 miles from New York City to Falmouth, England.
We had no idea what the hell we were doing. You know, we were all 23 and had any kind of deep water experience or yard experience, and we just kind of had a lot of optimism and hard-headedness.
72 days after Hansen's team left New York, they set foot on British soil. They won the race by 10 days, setting a new Guinness World Record for the first unassisted row from the mainland U.S. to mainland U.K. They'd lost almost 150 pounds among the four of them because they misestimated how much food they need for the adventure. A few years later, Hansen and his buddies were back at it, planning a longer trip from West Africa to Miami. They partnered with the Canadian Wildlife Federation to study the ocean and promote conservation in 2013.
We had tons of scientific equipment on the boat that were soaking up data the whole time.
What kind of data was it?
Temperature, salinity, dissolved oxygen, dissolved CO2. We were running psychological studies, sleep studies, and testing as many things as we possibly could, given that environment and it's the fact that it's extreme.
But it wasn't meant to be. Just east of the infamous Bermuda Triangle, again 72 days into their journey, Hansen says all it took was two square waves at a bad time to capsize the rowboat, putting the four men's lives in jeopardy.
The ocean almost never gives back what it claims. At home, a mother sat and worried for weeks before she got the dreaded phone call.
And the world stopped. Every fear I had come to fruition. My son was gone.
We were on Dateline. If you Google Dateline and capsize, you can see their dramatic rendition of capsizing.
Hansen really downplays the danger here. He says the U.S. Coast Guard diverted a car carrier to rescue them just 12 hours after capsizing.
The boat could handle big rough water. It's just that these two waves that hit us were kind of funky. They hit us like a 1-2 punch. We were in the middle of shifting people in and out of the cabin, and by the time I saw the wave and by the time we were in the water and everybody was okay, it was like between 10 and 15 seconds. We had all the right tools. So we had four PLBs, one on each of our life vests. We never really had to deal with a lot of fear because we knew things were working. I mean, if we'd been out there another 24 hours, I think it would have completely changed the game. But the scariest part of that night was climbing from the life raft up a 45-foot rope ladder, like 6-foot seas, into this car carrier.
Even though that ladder made him nervous, Hansen says rowing across the ocean isn't as deadly or dangerous as people think.
The majority of the time, it is really, really chill. It's a lot of work. It's very consistent. But you get to see the ocean and all of its flavors. And you're going so slow that it's really hard to miss things.
Among those things, Hansen describes a super pod of dolphins. What looked like a line of whitewater crashing over the horizon turned out to be thousands of animals rushing past.
I mean, they were everywhere. They were as far as we could see. You could look down into the water and you could, like 15 feet deep, you could see it just stacked with dolphins. And it was loud. You could hear them, clicking and chirping to each other. And it was, an overwhelming experience of wildlife. It was like being in the middle of a stampede.
Another time, Hansen slipped in the water to swim alongside pilot whales the size of a school bus. Flying squid flopped down on the boat as a welcome addition to their diet. Quick fried in a bit of coconut oil, they turn out to be pretty tasty, he says. And without light pollution, a beautiful nighttime rainbow, or a moonbow, spread across the sky after a squall. Hansen says that's the most profound thing he's ever witnessed. He's looking forward to getting out on Bristol Bay for a very different adventure.
Here I am. It's something I wanted to do for years. I've heard about this fishery for a long, long time, and it seems really fun and challenging, and it's something like an athleticism around it, like a race type vibe that you can kind of see.
And around him, as he says this, deckhands all over the boatyard are putting in hours, preparing for the days they'll be picking fish out of nets for 24 hours or more while they're out on the bay. Hansen says it's a privilege to, quote, choose your hard.
People are happy when they're doing things that are challenging in one way or the other, and especially if you can choose it, and it's, you know, if you challenge yourself consistently doing things that you like when you don't have a choice, when something's really hard and crappy in your life, then you can take some of those lessons and apply it to that. Everything seems just a little bit more important when you're on a boat and you're surrounded by water, because things really, they really, really matter. There's no half-assing it.
And there's no doubt Hansen will absolutely find that challenge he craves out there fishing Bristol Bay. Once the season ends, he says he'll find a cheap place to disappear for the winter near Seattle as he works on a set of novels. For KDLG and Dillingham, I'm Austin Fast.